Yo, what's going on, everybody? It's your boys, Damian Parson and Keith Sanchez. Welcome back to the Talent Factor Podcast. Keith, my brother, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good, man. And matter of fact, I'm more than good. I'm excited. We're talking about some playmakers, some game changers with the wide receivers. We got to watch some film and get a good vibe for this upcoming wide receiver class if everybody declares. So I'm excited to talk about these guys. I think we have some dynamic playmakers and possibly a bunch of first-round guys if everything pans out how it should be.
Absolutely, man. And we're going to talk about five impactful receivers on this episode, and then we're going to talk about the tight ends just a little bit as well to close it out. Keith, I want to start in your neck of the woods, right?
Okay, let's go.
In New Orleans, and at LSU, Kayshon Boutte, 6 foot even, 185 pounds listed on the team's website. Explosive before and after the catch, pre and post catch, he's explosive. Rack ability, run after the catch, strength to play through contact. He's a three level receiver. The crazy thing about it, Keith, because I think he played six games this year, and he lost the rest of the season due to a season injury. So we haven't gotten the chance to see a full just unleash Kayshon. But that's you're LSU guy on the show. So talk to me about Kayshon just a little bit.
Yeah, man, watching the games and understanding his production, it's very rare that you use the word workhorse for wide receiver. Usually that term is, slated for running backs, but Kayshon is the workhorse of this offense. Everybody knows coming into the game that they're going to throw the football to him. They try to double team him, and they still throw the football to him. He's by far their best receiving option, their best offensive weapon on the offensive side of the ball. And I think that was proven, like you said, through his production through six games. He was leading the country in receiving touchdowns. And you're talking about a guy, like you said, that's listed at 6 foot, that might be 5'11", 190 pounds. So you just have to respect how this guy approaches the game and just how he's able to just get the job done at the end of the day.
Yeah, when I was watching them, Keith, I saw some, could be revisionist history. I'm going to stick with the same school, with LSU, and some people may say, hey, you're scouting the helmet. But in this situation, I don't mind doing it. When I was watching him after the catch fight through arm tackles to take the catch to the distance, I saw a little bit of Ja'Marr Chase in him with that physical play strength. But then that dynamic ability in and out of his breaks, that catching the ball from his body, I saw a little bit of OBJ too.
I had a feeling you were going to mention it. I know you was hesitant to mention it, but man, go ahead and say it, man. Go ahead and say it.
I saw Odell Beckham and some Ja'Marr Chase in this game, man. And this kid, that's why I'm excited to see. And the main thing he needs, of course, is to have a full healthy season in 2022.
Yes.
But also competent quarterback play that can give him the football. Like you said, he's a workhorse. He's not just a down the field threat. He catches those quick slants, and he plays through that contact in the contact window. Good hip rotation out of his slants and his out routes, but he's able to catch screens and make plays happen in the short, quick game as well. He's a complete skill set, Keith. So I'm excited to see a full season of him, because in the SEC, think about that game against Bama, right? We're going to see him against his old teammate, Elias Ricks, over there one-on-one. I'm looking forward to that, because that's the impact matchup, right? And LSU played them very tough in 2021. And this is a team that went to the national championship in Alabama. So Saban retooled, brought some guys back. But I'm looking at Kayshon, man, and to me, and I know you probably feel the exact same way, the next guy on our list, people may say he's wide receiver one, but I could see Kayshon with a great, full season in 2022 being that wide receiver one off a board in the 2023 NFL draft.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to talk about the kid's character, right, and just a testament to him. And you talked about him being a complete wide receiver, but, I've been scouting this guy for 4 or 5 years since he was a freshman, sophomore in high school, and he wasn't always a complete wide receiver. So he initially was a quick screen and then take it over the top guy where he can use his speed, but his ability to work the middle of the field now and kind of present those little nuances that it take to be a really good wide receiver as far as running with tempo, understanding how to catch the football, understanding your surroundings, zone defense, I think he really took it the next step. So when you talk about a wide receiver that's continuing to get better, I think Kayshawn Boutte is one of those guys, and I expect him to have a good season. But we know with quarterbacks, it depends on who's throwing you the football. So I know LSU brought back Miles Brennan, who has a gunslinger mentality. So I'm excited to see what Kayshawn can do next year for sure, because he should be able to put up some good numbers.
When you mention put up good numbers, the next guy on our list,
okay,
Jackson Smith and Jigba from Ohio State, 6 foot, 198, basically on the 200-pound, towing the 200-pound line. I'm going to throw quick numbers at you.
Okay.
95 receptions, 1,600 yards, 9 touchdowns, 17 yards per catch. Keith, when you watch them, what do you see in this game?
Man, I see something that's become rare, and that's a true XY receiver. You think about in the past drafts, right? We've had Jerry Judy, we've had Devontae Smith, we've had these smaller, slider, slender frame guys who are best when you put them in motion, you line them up in bunch sets, you put them in a slot, you line them up off the line of scrimmage. But I think Jackson Smith and Jigba, like you said, he's almost 200 pounds. You can see the strength in his game, right? Both in his release and also just him after he catches the football. He's a very strong guy. So I think that when you line him up at XY receiver by himself and he's lined up with a press man corner, he can continue to beat that corner. And I think that that's rare. The last guy we've seen, it may have been a couple of years, maybe Jamar Chase, but obviously he hasn't played in 2 years. But other than that, it's been these smaller, slider wide receivers that have manned the number one wide receiver position. But I think Jackson Smith, with his size, he should be the lead runner as far as the number one wide receiver in this class coming up.
Yeah, he did benefit from Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. But, man, you look at his game, like you talk about the power, the play strength. He's a big, thick receiver. I think, for me, I'm excited to see his impact, whether they move him out of the slot, because he predominantly played in the slot, ran a lot of – he's one of those guys, and it's crazy because his game would translate back to the older days, right, when safeties could knock your block off, right? Like, he would come across the middle with no fear. He's tough. Yak machine, man. Like, his ability, his intelligence to find the soft spots in the zone, Keith, catch the ball and then make plays. He's got some elusiveness and quickness after the catch in his game. He is a beast in the short to intermediate game. I do question, does he have the speed and athleticism to win vertically on the outside as an X, or does he project more as a slot, big, thick slot, big Y possession receiver? But, man, this kid has so many tools in his tool belt right now. He's incredible to watch. And that connection with him and C.J. Stroud, I think it's just going to take another step in 2022. I'm excited to see him because he's going to open up for those other young receivers, kind of how Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson kind of open things up for him.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. First, I want to say this. I believe that he was the best wide receiver in a receiver core last year. When you just talk about a skill set and everything he was able to bring to the table from an athleticism standpoint, and you talked about his build, and I think we've seen a guy with a similar build like this in his past, this past draft, and that was Jamar Chase. I think athletic profile, they're built very similar. And everybody thought that Jamar Chase was a 4-5 guy until he went to the combine pro day and put down a 4-3. So I think you have to be careful of those guys that have deceptive speed and guys that don't always have to play full speed because they approach the game with good tempo. They just know how to simply beat the cornerback. Full speed isn't always the best speed. And Jackson Smith and Jigba understands that. And like you said, I love him because of his run after the catch. He's a tough tackle for corners and safeties, much like Jamar Chase is once he gets the football in his hands.
Absolutely. He's talented, man. So I'm looking for that battle for wide receiver one between him and Kayshawn. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch, a lot of fun to watch. Now, Keith, to talk about fun to watch, right, down in Pitt, Kenny Pickett's favorite target last year, Jordan Addison. 6 foot. He's on the slender side. We just talked about slender receivers. 6 foot even, 175 estimated. And you look at his game, shifty, elusive with the ball in his hands, explosive in and out of his breaks, great body control. He's sure-handed, makes some acrobatic catches. He gives you that alignment versatility. Crazy stat. He had 40 plays last year of 15-plus yards in the passing game. I'm really interested to see how he meshes with Keaton Slovis coming in as a transfer. But this young man and what they were able to do, the way they moved him around, I dare I say he gives me some Stephon Diggs kind of vibes.
Okay.
Just the build, the body control is really what kind of gets me. You don't see guys that are you don't see many receivers rather that are sub 6'1", 6'2", sub 185 pounds that are great on the back shoulder. On the outside, like he makes those plays where he can stop on the dime. He sees the ball, adjust to it. And again, the strong hands, the body control to get his both feet down almost, you know, like a professional receiver in the NFL. What are your thoughts on Jordan Addison?
Nah, so I'm gonna pick up exactly where you left off. And that was the contested catch factor. And when I was writing my notes on this guy, doing this guy write up, that's what I continued to write. I kept saying contested catch, contested catch, contested catch, because it seemed as though the defensive back was always in position, but this guy just managed to keep the concentration and the focus on the football to haul in the pass. So I think he's a very good football player. And for a guy not being that big, he plays big, right? And I think that that's a very important thing, especially when you talk about a small school, let me not say a small school guy, but a smaller school guy, right? I want to give Pittsburgh, you know, their recognition as a you know, football school. But those guys usually have that type of grit to their game, their, you know, willingness to want to fight to be the number one guy. And you're talking about a guy that took home the award for being the best wide receiver in college football. So that's a testament to him. But, man, what I want to kind of get into is for Addison is – what does he do, right? Because you had Kenny Pickett, who had one of the greatest seasons for a college football quarterback. So what do you think his numbers will be like this season, and how do you feel like that will affect his draft stock?
Man, his numbers, and we talked about it when we on the Cube, on I think our first episode, when we talked about Keaton Slovis transferring.
Right.
One thing about Slovis, when his favorite target is going to get, they're going to get the ball. He's going to force feed that bad boy. He's going to make sure you get your targets and you're happy. He's a wide receiver's best friend, right? You know, hey, I'm open all the time. That's how receivers think. So watching him, he's very, very difficult to defend in the slot. I want to see if they transition him more out wide and how Slovis doesn't have the best arm. He's not somebody that's going to drive it consistently in those tight windows. And like you said, DBs were able to kind of be in phase on a lot of those throws that, even though they were receptions, it still gives you a little worry that guys are still, especially for a smaller receiver, that DBs are in your hip pocket like that. For someone that's 6'1", 175, you want to see a little bit better separation. But – you know, that said, I think his numbers will still be good. I could definitely see a drop off just because of the quarterback play. Kenny Pickett, him and that timing they had, you know, it's just kind of, I know where you want it. I know where you're going to be. And he put it there. And that's what you saw on tape. We're going to have to see how him and Keaton Slovis, how they're able to mesh, how quickly they're able to mesh rather.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you explained that exactly how I looked at it. It's going to be up to those guys meshing. And, you know, unfortunately for Addison, his draft stock is kind of going to be somewhat dependent on that. Just the way his game goes, like you say, his, I don't say inability, but the lack of always creating separation and needing a good throw from the quarterback. And that's what I kind of noticed. Like, he's going to need the quarterback to deliver a pretty good football so that way he can go attack the football and haul in the pass. So this is a guy that, when you talk about his season coming up, it's a wild card. You have no idea how it's going to play out. And I'm more than sure if it was up to him, he probably would have left after this year, you know, just left while his stock was up and he knew that he had pretty good yardage.
Yeah, and like I said, that – His draft stock is definitely going to be, I mean, he had 100 catches for over 1,500 yards, 17 touchdowns, 16 yards per catch. He was really, really productive, right? But one thing we do know, like you talk about, the talent factor, you know, we talk about the why, right? So it's like, yeah, we know what the end product was. We know what the end of the process, but what was the process? What did he do well? And those are the things, the contested catches, the strong hands, the body control, things of that nature. And it just, like you said, going into this season, just improving on that natural separation on his own, like being able to win with his routes, win quickly, and help Keaton Slovis out, because, again, that timing is going to be something that they have to build upon as not just the spring, not just from spring ball, but into the rest of the offseason and then into the season itself. But it's going to be fun to watch because you look at the first two guys we named are definitely going to be first round picks 9 times out of 10. Yeah. Like these are two guys that the NFL is going to think highly of. And for Addison being a smaller guy compared to those two thicker frames, he's going to have to show out and show that, hey, I can play not just in, you know, not just with quickness and speed, but also play well in the contact window and fight through contact in his stems as well.
Yep. I agree.
Now, sticking with the slender side, this the weight kind of threw me off when I looked this up on this kid, Xavier Worthy from Texas, the freshman.
I had a feeling.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I was so shocked by it, Keith. I was like, "What?" I was like, "Hold on a second." I was on their website, so I had to make sure I was looking at it correctly. He's listed at 6'1", 160, Keith. Like, I did not expect that. That's kind of, isn't that Devonta Smith kind of range right there?
Like, yeah, that's when you need your protein, and you got to stay in you got to stay on the nutrition plan for most of your career. Because if he's 160 pounds, I'm more than sure he's gonna fight to touch 175 at some point in his career.
We gotta get him some eggs, man. You gotta get him some protein, man. You gotta get something into his diet, right? So, Keith, looking at this kid, I saw, you know, we talked about him before. He's an explosive guy with the ball in his hands. He gives you some run after the catch. Even though he's 160, there are times where, but you know, across the middle on slants and digs, where he's able to shrug off the first and initial tackle and get upfield to give you some yards after the catch. Texas does a good job manufacturing space for him, though, Keith. A lot of bunch sets at times, some stack situations, keeping him off the line of scrimmage. What are your initial thoughts on this explosive freshman from Texas?
Yeah, I think that was the first thing I noticed was explosiveness, right? This guy can absolutely take the top off of defense with go routes, skinny posts, running deep overs, things of that nature. He can absolutely just threaten you vertically on every single play. And I think early on in his, you know, the season, that's what he did, right? And then I think as the season progressed, you've seen him develop as a wide receiver, and him and quarterback's timing got better. So he was able to run some of those quick slants and just run in the middle of the field. As a player, just comparison and just thinking about guys that we've seen in the past, he reminded me somewhat of a Ted Ginn type, right? Just one of those vertical threat type guys that can push vertically to where they aren't big guys and they probably shouldn't be going across the middle, but they can have an impact on the game. This is a guy that I expect to get involved in the kick return game, the punt return game, and then just really be able to stretch an offense vertically. We've talked about what Steve Sarkisian can do with weapons. And I think that this is a weapon that he's probably really excited about. He's similar to the speed that he had at University of Alabama with the receivers that Alabama had.
Absolutely. I mean, he had 62 receptions, 981 yards, average almost 16, roughly around 16 yards per catch. He had 12 touchdowns on the season as well. I can't remember which game it was that I remember watching where I think the first play or his first touch was a wide receiver screen. He followed his blocks, made one or two guys miss, and it was house. It was over.
Yeah.
You know, like you said last week, strike up the band, baby. You got the drum line rolling because he scored, right? So now we talked about this kid, you know, the transfer quarterback Quinn Ewers coming in, big arm guy who can really let the ball go. And that was something that was an issue, I think, with Hunter Thompson and the other young quarterback they had last year. Just inconsistent quarterback play for Xavier Worthy, and he still almost had 1,000 yards. Now you bring in a guy that's like literally he's a five-star. He was the top recruit in college, in the nation, coming out of high school. That big arm, that his throwing ability can really unlock Worthy. And Worthy's one of those, both of these kids actually are kind of, future freaks of the NFL draft, because they're both coming off of true freshman seasons. So they're going to be true sophomores. So they're not going to be in the draft until 2024. So they both have 2 years together to put up crazy numbers in the Big 12.
Yeah, and I think that we're at a time now where the NFL is starting to covet these fast wide receivers. They, you know, more and more they're starting to realize that, hey, you know what, speed kills. Like, if the defensive back just flat out can't cover the wide receiver, then just send them vertically up the field, and we'll just get a quarterback that can get the ball to him. And like you said, Quinn Ewers can get the football to him. So it reminds you of those offenses like, you know, Kansas City, where they're just always pushing you vertically. And at some point, they stretch the defense to where every zone becomes man. So I think he's one of those type of guys that he's going to strike fear in defensive coordinator's heart. It's in college football, and he has potential to do it in the NFL.
Absolutely, man. And it says it's going to be a lot of fun to watch that offense pretty much because, you know, like you said, the league is looking at speed in the right light now. Like, hey, I can't teach this. I always talk about with scouting, and you can attest to it as well. You look at what player can do, what they can't do. What can I coach? What can I coach? Running the 4.2, I can't coach you to that. I can't tell you. We're not going to wake you up at 22 years old and say, listen, we're going to go to the track and we're going to get you to a 4.2. You're not going to train that, right? You can't get to that 10.1 in the 100-meter dash. You just you wake up out of the bed as a child from birth with that. That's a God-given, right? So, you know, you look at what you can't teach, and the way that the NFL is starting to be with offenses now, Keith, creating that manufactured space for receivers and their weapons. You got a kid that can run that 4.4, 4.3, 4.2, and now you put them in bunch sets. You put them on the move, and look at Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp's one of the greatest separators in football right now, right? Great route runner, great tempo. Sean McVay's like, now I'm going to make you almost unguardable because I'm going to put you off the ball by 2 yards. Yeah. I'm going to motion you. I'm going to get you away from being touched at the line of scrimmage, switch releases and all. And now defensive backs are sitting there flat-footed as he's approaching them in his stem, and then it's lights out because he's so quick in the phone booth. So that I love that point that you made, the NFL and how they're coveting speed. The way that these offenses are now, man, it's hard to defend a lot of these guys. But, Keith, and you brought this kid. You're the one who threw this kid out here to us, you know, before the show and everything, early in the week. Talk about hard to guard. Quentin Johnston from TCU. 6'4", 201 pounds, about 200 pounds. And I know we texted you. We talked on the phone. You have some interesting comps for this young man, right? He's a big body target. He's strong after the catch, 7.7 yards after the catch. Top end speed to win vertically. Offers above the rim play style. Will dunk on corners. His 2021 season was cut due to some injuries as well. Keith, what are your thoughts on this kid? Because he, you know, watching him and for that offense, he doesn't have great quarterback play, but he's a dude.
Yeah, nah, just simply with that put, he's a dude. He stands out on that offense. You know that he's the best player on that offense. And like you said, he doesn't even have great quarterback play. The quarterback gets away with just throwing the football in his general area, and he comes down with it. He has spectacular catch radius. Even after he gets the football, for a big guy, we notice with these big guys, they're not usually quick, right? They're not explosive, but this guy is explosive. He gets out of there, and he reminded me a lot of early on of AJ Green and T Higgins, those type of guys that have long frames, that are 6'3", 6'4", very fluid guys, and can simply run away from defenders. So when you cut the film on and you see this guy, it's like, man, this is a true football player. And to that point, he's not a guy that flew under the radar. He was a 4-star, 5-star kid coming out. He just chose to go to TCU. So this is a guy that checks all the boxes, and he's checked all the boxes since he was in high school. So I think he expects to make big time football plays. So I'm excited to watch this guy. And we know at TCU and in the Big 12 is a wide open conference, right? So he's going to have plenty of room to operate, and I don't think there be too many corners that can cover Quentin Johnston.
No, and there, even in a shortened season for him last year with the injuries, it still wasn't many corners that could cover him. He had three games over 100 yards. He torched Oklahoma for 185 and 3 touchdowns. He had a successful day against West Virginia, 5 for 113. But against Baylor, and Baylor had one of the better defenses in the country, I would say, right? They had a great defense over there, Keith. 5 catches, 142, averaged almost 29 yards per catch, and he had a touchdown that day. He was – when he's on and when they literally feature him in the passing game, he is a legit problem. So a full season for him, I'm excited to see. Now, I'm going to let you, because this is one of your SEC dudes, and this is a guy that you made sure we had on this list.
We had to get him on there.
The transfer to Alabama. Talk about Jermaine Burton a little bit.
Okay, Jermaine Burton. So He's a Georgia transfer to Alabama, but just a little background on this guy. When I was at LSU, we had him committed to LSU for probably about 6-7 months. And, you know, he's from Atlanta. He was in California at the time, but he's from Atlanta. And he decided to go to Georgia, right? He wanted to go back home. And then after 2 years, he decided to transfer. And just knowing this kid and his mental makeup, I believe that a good part of his transferring had to do with him wanted to be the man. He was a five-star kid coming out of high school. He was noted as the number one wide receiver in his class. He, like I said, is a five-star kid. So I think he wanted the production. And when you do things like Alabama did last year with Jameson Williams, it affords you the opportunity to repeat them, right? And you see these kids wanting to kind of remake their career. And I think that's what Jermaine Burton did. And you talk about the transfer portal, him having the opportunity to do that. So this is a guy that transferred from Georgia that's extremely talented. He's not a guy that transferred because he couldn't get on the field. Like, he was starting for Georgia. He played in a national championship game. I think he just wanted more opportunities to catch the football. We talked about Stetson Bennett and that quarterback situation. And I believe as soon as Kirby Smart came out and said that Stetson Bennett is the quarterback next year, I believe Jermaine Burton hopped in the portal the very next day. So, man, I think this was just a production-based thing, and you can't blame them, right? Like, when you think about a receiver, they need quarterbacks to throw them a football. We look at the career and just the narrative behind Odell Beckham. When he was with the Giants getting the football, he was donned as a future Hall of Famer. He transitioned, goes to Cleveland, and his numbers sink due to injury, but a big part due to Baker Mayfield and his inability to get him the football. And everybody was saying he doesn't have it anymore. Then guess what? He gets traded in the middle of the season, and he almost matches his production in half the amount of games. And everybody's like, you know what? He still has it. So, man, it's just what the transfer portal is allowing these guys to do. And I think Jermaine Burton can have a similar type of path and trajectory that Odell Beckham had as far as finding a new spot and finding a spot where he'll be able to get the football.
Absolutely. And when I was watching him on tape, he showcased the long speed to win vertically. He's tough across the middle and in contested and congested areas on the field. And then he offers you some of that manufactured carries, manufactured touches with some misdirection on wide receiver reverses and screens. He got strong hands, patient. He tracks the ball so well downfield. Yes. And the crazy thing about it is, like you said, Stetson Bennett returning was not a good thing for him, because then I see in the news today, Eric Gilbert, the tight end, big receiver, whatever you want to label him as, he's returning back to the roster over there in Georgia. So now you have him, Brock Bowers, and the big tight end Washington, and it's like they're probably going to come out 13 personnel, and Stetson Bennett is looking at all the big guys. He's not looking at Burton. So Burton's like, you know what, man? I need to be drafted in the first 2-3 rounds. And with Stetson Bennett, that's not going to work for me. With his skill set, you know, Jameson Williams leaving, you know, John Metchie leaving, he comes in, and as long as he picks up the offense quickly and gets up to speed and gets that camaraderie and that connection with Bryce Young quickly, he's going to be the number one receiver over there, man. And it sucks for Georgia, because it's like, wait a minute, we just beat Bama. You won the national title with us. And he's like, yeah, but that national title is not going to get me first round contention. I need 1,200 yards and 15 touchdowns in 2022. And I think he could absolutely get that. You know, in that Bama offense, they're going to feature this kid. He has the tools to be one of the better, more impactful receivers. That's why he's on our list. He can be a real big impact in the SEC on Bama's offense.
Nah, I agree. He's just flat out talented. He's a guy that we talked about flying under the radar. He's under the radar right now. Like, nobody really knows who he is. Like I said, it's very comparable to Jameson Williams, where you see a guy transfer from Alabama from a previous big time program, and you automatically assume, okay, it's because he couldn't get on the field or he's not talented. I can say I've watched Jermaine Burton in person. This guy is extremely talented. He has all the skill sets he needs to be a number one wide receiver. And for me, it's stock up for him. Like, I'm expecting this guy to take off, blow up. And I wouldn't even say second and third round. This guy, with Bryce Young getting the football and him being a number one wide receiver, he has first round potential written all over him. So I expect him to be a first round guy next year.
Yes, sir. I mean, think to Jermaine Johnson, and what, you know, and we love him over at TDN. He was kind of backlogged on that talented defense, and he goes to Florida State and has a tremendous season, tremendous draft process so far. So I'm looking forward to seeing Jermaine Burton just kind of take off in 2022 with better quarterback play. And you talk about takeoff, right? You talk about explosiveness. Man, the tight end position. I'll ask this to you, Keith. Is the tight end position the biggest mismatch in the NFL? Like, is that the biggest way to create mismatches in the NFL right now?
Yes, I think it's the easiest way, because I think that the safeties and linebackers are still catching up athletically to where these tight ends have progressed and put their game. And then also, it's the easiest spot for the quarterback to get the football, right? Like, it's right there in the middle of the field. So it's not a lot of progressions that's involved in that. So a tight end that can create separation easily, that can run away from defenders, man, that's a quarterback's best friend. And I think that's what we have when we talk about a couple of these tight ends coming up. I would like to stay in the state of Georgia, specifically with my guy, Brock Bowers. And this is a guy, as a true freshman, put on one of the all-time campaigns for a tight end, period. Like, his team won a national championship, and he was the number one threat, I would say, offensively, not even just of the receivers, not even just of the tight ends, not running backs. He was the number one threat offensively. And this is a guy from Napa, California. Napa has more than just fine wine. They have football players out there. And he just made plays, man. And so you think about this guy just being a freshman, what is he going to do his sophomore year and his junior year? He's just going to continue to build. So this guy I'm extremely excited about.
Now, Brock Bowers is a dude. He's the dude at tight end in college. Yeah. And he's to me, you could say he's the best tight end as a freshman. Like, looking at, you know, and we have Michael Mayer and Jaleel Billingsley and those guys. But Brock Bowers, 6'4", 230. Man, the numbers he put up last year, 56 receptions, 882 yards receiving, 13 touchdowns. He averaged 16 yards per catch. Go back to the semifinal. Where they basically they lost to the SEC championship game, rather. They lost to Bama. He had 10 for 139. He was the most consistent threat, and he's the security blanket of Stetson Bennett, which is the reason why Jermaine Burton's like, I got to get out of here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he already knows Brock Bowers is technically wide receiver one, but when you look at his game, he has even though he's listed at 230, Keith, he has an NFL – like ready-made body, powerful frame, thick, strong frame, built well. He creates those yards at the contact opportunities with his contact balance and his strength to bounce and pinball off tackles. Explosive athlete, can threaten vertically, work the middle of the field. I don't even have a comp for him, to be honest, because I can't wait to see him test, which will be in 2024. But I can't wait to see him test, because I think he's going to test off the charts. Like, this is a really explosive athlete that's playing tight end, and I don't think we've seen anyone like him in a while. I mean, you look at Travis Kelce, but Travis Kelce is, what, 6'5", like 260, right? Yeah. And I don't think Travis Kelce has the juice that Brock Bowers has. So, right. You know what? I did have a comp. I think he's a more physical version of Aaron Hernandez.
Okay.
I think it's a more physical version of Aaron Hernandez, where, and I don't know, because if I remember correctly, they even kind of gave him, he had a couple carries this year as well. He had a rushing touchdown, because remember Aaron Hernandez for the Patriots, and even at Florida, they would line up in the backfield and shotgun inside zones and, you know, throw him screens out of the backfield. They just, you know, Belichick, them use him in such a just a phenomenal way. And you think about the explosiveness, the quick feet and everything that Brock Bowers has. Man, he's such a fun player to watch.
Yeah, no, I couldn't land on one guy for a comparison, but if you can kind of intertwine these guys and cross these guys, it was George Kittle and Vernon Davis. Because he runs like a madman, like George Kittle does with the football, but he can push vertically like Vernon Davis was. And I believe Vernon Davis was a top 10 pick when he came out for the 49ers. And that was because of his explosiveness and playmaking ability. And, you know, when you think about those 49er teams, Vernon Davis, he was the number one receiving threat also on those early teams. So I think that Brock Bowers in a very similar situation. And it's just special and unique to see that at the tight end position. And we talked about that Jermaine Burton had Stetson Bennett throwing him a football, right? But you got to think about it. Brock Bowers had Stetson Bennett throwing the football too. So those 800 yards receiving could have easily been 1,000 yards receiving for a tight end of his caliber. And he, like you said, he did all of this as a true freshman. So, man, this is special of what this kid can be.
He walked in as a grown man, Keith. He walked in as a grown man, as a freshman. You don't see too many kids walking in at 18, 19 years old and look the way he does. Like, it's incredible. It's incredible. But I know that there was a tight end that you wanted to discuss who's leaving the SEC and going to the Big 12. That was Jahlil Billingsley. What were you, you know, for you, what makes him a potential impact player for Texas?
Man, so we go back to the conference and you're talking about Big 12, right? And, you know, just everything spread out. And we talked about Steve Sarkisian. We talked about Quinn Ewers. We talked about Bijan Robinson. And then you add in a playmaking tight end like this, a guy that can just stretch the field vertically. I think he's going to put up great numbers in this offense because he's a mismatch problem. There are not too many safeties that can cover him. There are not linebackers that can run with him. So when you talk about a guy that can just simply get the football in his hands, he can do a lot of special things. And coming into the season, obviously he fell off this year, but coming into this season, we were really high on him at the Draft Network, right? We had him with first round grades, and that was because of his athletic ability. He reminded us of an Evan Engram type, O.J. Howard, those Alabama tight ends that can beat you in multiple ways, and you don't have a answer for them. When you roll into the game, and that's the scariest part to be on the defense, is when you're like, you know what? I don't have an answer for this guy. So Jahlil Billingsley has that type of talent. It's just a matter of, you know, mentally him getting it together and then him meshing with Quinn Ewers and putting it all together. But this is a guy that he can threaten for that 1,000 yards receiving in this upcoming season.
No, I agree. And he's 6'4", 230. He literally looks very similar to Evan Engram. I love that you brought that up. Just from a build standpoint, he looks like a receiver. The same way Evan Engram coming in was a build in the athleticism of a receiver. And he's physically difficult to defend, especially in the short game, how quick he is in and out of his breaks. He can, you know, break out, you know, keep press vertically, break out on a corner, break out on the post, break inside on the post, rather. He can snap it down. He can put safeties and linebackers in limbo trying to run stride for stride with him. So he definitely, like I said, and the main thing is him and Saban, you know, at the end of the day, they just couldn't get it together. They couldn't mesh. And Saban's kind of, you know, like Bill Belichick, they want these tough-minded, you know, these type – they want their type of guys. And Billingsley just wasn't that type of guy to stick around with Saban. He got in his doghouse early, and he hasn't been able to produce the way that we wanted to see from him. But like you said, he has the potential to be a big-time impact player in Texas with Quinn Ewers and Coach Marion and Sarkisian. And I think that there could be a level of comfort with him offensively with Sarkisian as well, with his time in Alabama, knowing that scheme, knowing what he wants from his tight ends and everything, that could kind of speed up his development in this offense. And again, we talked about Xavier Worthy. We talked about Bijan Robinson last week and Quinn Ewers the week before. Texas offense could be explosive.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really pulling for this guy to really get it together. And Nick Saban, he just had a, I guess you would say, a press conference. And, you know, he had a speech, and it was probably about 2 minutes long. The clip that I seen, and he talked about guys just not being prepared. And you can say he was sending subtle shots towards Jahlil Billingsley in that speech. And it was just talking about Jahlil Billingsley not necessarily being tapped in all the time and just not being ready when his moment was called, when his number was called in the national championship game. So I hope that the culture change in Texas allows this guy to, you know, be able to mentally get everything together, because we've seen this every year that there's one guy that has an extreme amount of talent, but it seems to essentially go to waste because just not understanding the commitment that it takes to play football at a high level.
You're right. And it's, like I said, it's definitely something to watch, you know. But sometimes you have to hit rock bottom, Keith, in order to get to the top of the mountain. So hopefully this young man can take those failures that he had at Alabama, put his best foot forward at Texas, and blaze a trail for himself to get drafted in a reasonable spot next season for the NFL draft. But and shout out, you know, on just honorable mention, you know, he's a nice tight end as well. Michael Mayer over at Notre Dame, good pass catcher, runs good routes. Definitely, I think he's a new quarterback this year, you know, with Jack Cohn going over to the NFL. So he'll be another guy, you know, definitely to watch. He's eligible for the 2023 NFL draft. So a big season from him, or even a replicated season for 2020, from 2021 to 2022, could definitely land him in day two for sure, probably early day two, with the way that offenses covet the tight end position. But Keith, man, we've talked about some explosive players, man. And
yes, sir.
It's a lot of guys, and we're going to talk about a lot more as we get closer to the 2022 kickoff for the collegiate season. But, guys, as always, we want you guys to find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Subscribe, like, share, leave us a review. Let us know what you think about us. And I'm going to go ahead and give you a quick little just drop it in your ear. We will have a fan segment that's going to call Talk to Me Thursday, where we're going to drop a thread on Twitter where we want you guys to drop your questions about college football, the draft, whatever, and we'll answer them live on the show. But as always, guys, we thank you so much for the support. Stick with us. Every Thursday we record. Friday it will be out. I'm Damian Parson. That's Keith Sanchez. This is the Talent Factor Podcast.
And remember, talent is always a factor, baby. We out.